This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I want you to picture something. Imagine a child somewhere, anywhere in the world playing soccer. What do you see? A girl running drills on a grass soccer pitch? A boy and his friend kicking a ball around an alleyway? Or having a game on a dirty, dusty lot? What you probably didn't imagine are men in suits handing out bribes in the form of envelopes full of cash. And why would you? That has nothing to do with the game, right? But it does. And that's what this story is all about. The story of soccer, or football as most of the world knows it, is one of contradictions. There is the pure joy of the game, the beautiful game, the ballet of the masses. That has made soccer a truly global sport with billions of fans. And then there are those men, and they were all men. They're the ones behind the World Cup, soccer's ultimate contest. They are the lords of soccer, and they've pocketed millions of dollars while failing to live up to the basic standards of the game itself. This is the story of how their greed finally caught up with them.
Here is the planet's ultimate game.
FIFA's doing a really excellent job.
Playing fair may have cost Australia a chance to host the World Cup.
A crisis of corruption on full display for the world.
The game was hijacked.
FIFA's alleged tradition of bribery is taking a real human toll.
I'm very proud of our accomplishments.
I'm Connor Powell. This is Episode 1, The Inside Man. It's a brisk November evening in the year 2011. An electric scooter rolls slowly across the pink and rose-colored marble lobby of the 58th-story Trump Tower in downtown Manhattan. The man on the scooter is Chuck Blazer. He's a rare American on FIFA's executive committee. For nearly 20 years, he's traveled the world by private jet, stayed in five-star hotels, and rubbed elbows with a host of celebrities, sports stars, and world leaders. On this crisp autumn night, Glazer, with a head of hair and beard as bushy and white as Santa Claus's, is making his way to Uncle Jack's, a posh New York steakhouse on the West Side. He's joined by friends, including the woman he's dating, the former soap opera actress Marilyn Blanks. Because of his weight, which has ballooned to more than 400 pounds, he relies on a mobility scooter for assistance. Like many FIFA executives, Blazer is known in restaurants around the world for spending thousands of dollars on food, alcohol, and pretty much whatever the hell he wanted. In New York, Blazer was known as much for his love of strip clubs as he was for his love of Max, his blue and gold pet parrot. Max was regularly seen around town, sitting on Blazer's shoulder. On this fateful night, Max the parrot was left upstairs, in one of Blazer's two, yes, two, luxury Trump Tower apartments. Combined, they cost nearly $24,000 a month. One of the apartments was just for his cats, who apparently peed a lot, and so were rewarded with a residence of their own. You might be wondering, like I did, how this morbidly obese, clearly eccentric, American sports marketing executive from Queens, New York, ended up on soccer's International Governing Council. You might also ask, how could he afford such luxuries, like two penthouse apartments in downtown Manhattan? The federal agents, one from the Internal Revenue Service and the other from the Federal Bureau of Investigation, have been wondering the same thing. They were waiting for Blazer in the atrium of Trump Tower that very night, looking every bit the part of G-men in their conservative business suits. They approached the surprise Blazer as he and his friends were leaving the building through its obnoxious gold awning entrance on East 56th Street. Steve Berryman of the IRS and Jared Randall of the FBI introduced themselves. They told Blazer they were investigating corruption in international soccer and especially at FIFA. Blazer froze. His face turned white. They informed him the IRS couldn't find any records of him paying U.S. taxes for years. Now, meeting outside of the glitzy Trump Tower would have been an awkward place to cry poverty. And anyways, Blazer was too proud of his extravagant life that he had built to pretend it didn't exist. Blazer always knew this day might come.
He was always really fundamentally insecure.
That's Mary Pappenfuss. She co-wrote the book about Blazer called American Huckster, how Chuck Blazer got rich from and sold out the most powerful cabal in world sports.
And he told Mary Lynn that he was afraid people were going to finally find out who he was. And she said, "Who's that?" And he said, "Just a fat crook from Queens." And I think that was his self-image. He was a fat crook from Queens. He was going to grab whatever he could when he could. He's just going to, you know, go to the wall and maybe die before anyone caught him.
Berryman handed Blazer a white legal document. The subpoena ordered him to turn over all of his financial records. Blazer was facing at least 30 years in jail just for tax evasion. And more, many more, if the rumors of fraud, money laundering, racketeering that swirled around his time at FIFA were true. That's why the FBI was there. But Randall and the FBI weren't after just Blazer. They had much bigger designs. So they made him an offer he couldn't refuse.
It was maybe a 30-40 minute meeting, and they said, "We can arrest you right now, or you can wear a wire." And he said, "I'll wear a wire in a heartbeat."
FIFA's extraordinary greed was about to catch up with them. Blazer was just a vulnerable link in a corrupt chain, a pressure point the FBI and IRS could use to expose the wider fraud they had suspected for years, for decades. The rules of the game had been rigged by FIFA, for FIFA. Maybe it was inevitable given the organization's history of playing footsie with murderous dictators and shady oligarchs. So let me take you back to the beginning of 2011, when it all really began to unravel for Blazer and, ultimately, for FIFA itself. It started when Blazers' longtime soccer partner, Jack Warner, was caught with envelopes full of cash trying to buy FIFA's presidential election. But before we go too deep into our story, let me first explain what FIFA is, besides the letters you see printed on official soccer balls. The Fédération Internationale des Football Associations was founded in 1904 in Paris. It runs international soccer, the World Cup, the Women's World Cup, and a host of other smaller tournaments. Collectively, these games are watched by more than 4 billion people. That's more than half the planet. No surprise, then, that FIFA pulls in billions of dollars each year. And by these measures, it's been a great success. FIFA is also an epic failure, a testament to greed. There's long been talk of widespread corruption, a rot at the highest levels of the organization. In 2015, two other organizations with acronyms you already know, the FBI and the IRS, arrested more than a dozen former and current FIFA members on charges of bribery, fraud, and money laundering. These arrests, many of which can be traced back to that chilly fall meeting with Blazer, rip back the curtain of institutional rot and dirty dealings of an organization operating completely out of bounds. Even over the noise of the TV, Marilyn Blanks could hear the anger in her boyfriend Chuck Blazer's voice as he talked on the phone with a soccer official from the Bahamas. Blazer's TV was always on and always loud. It was a lot like Blazer himself. So when he threw his phone across the penthouse bedroom, Blanks knew whatever was wrong must be bad. And it was. You see, before he agreed to be a snitch for the U.S. government, Blazer was a reluctant whistleblower. I mean, don't get me wrong. You wouldn't confuse him with some do-gooder or anti-corruption advocate. Blazer was just a crook stuck in a tug of war between two other crooks. And to understand how all of this fits together and why Blazer threw his phone across his bedroom, you need to hear about an email Blazer received a couple weeks before from his longtime boss, Jack Warner, a FIFA vice president and the head of CONCACAF, the Confederation of North, Central America, and Caribbean Association Football, one of FIFA's six regional confederations. Blazer and Warner had been partners and allies in world soccer since Warner was first elected the head of CONCACAF in 1990. They had built a successful, lucrative relationship despite being polar opposites.
They seem like Mutt and Jeff, really very, very different from completely different worlds. But for some reason, they hit it off.
Blazer was this physically imposing, gregarious Jewish marketing executive from Queens. He'd made his living traveling from sales convention to sales convention, selling, you know, pretty much anything he could. He was also a suburban soccer dad. And that's when he spotted a trend that changed the course of his life, says Mary Papenfuss.
He knew nothing about soccer, but what he did notice was that all of these kids were playing soccer and all of these parents were into soccer, and he thought, this is the future of sports.
Through a combination of charisma and force of will, he rose through the ranks of international soccer. Along the way, he forged new and very profitable sponsorships and TV marketing deals in the U.S. and around the world. Warner was every bit the soccer fanatic that Blazer wasn't. He was also wire-thin, brash, a black man raised Catholic who taught history on the tiny island nation of Trinidad and Tobago. He was known most for making things happen for himself and his friends. Here's journalist Grant Wall, who's covered international soccer for more than 20 years, describing Warner.
He was always a pretty clever, cagey guy. For Jack Warner, it was always about getting the best deal for himself.
In 1990, the two took over the poor and historically weak soccer federation, CONCACAF. Together, they built it into a massive soccer marketing empire.
In the late 80s, he teamed up with Jack Warner, who was the president of the Trinidad and Tobago Federation, a guy who understood politics, and they decided that Jack Warner would run for president of CONCACAF, Chuck Blazer would run as general secretary, and that they would get all the votes in the Caribbean because Jack Warner was involved. They worked together for a really long time.
With Warner as president and Blazer as general secretary, the money started rolling in. With a string of sponsorships and TV agreements, the duo turned the once backwater soccer association into a revenue-generating powerhouse for FIFA. These guys were getting rich. Here's Blazer bragging about his accomplishments.
FIFA's doing a really excellent job of promoting football around the world. If I look back 10 years, 20 years, and see the progress we made, I'm very proud of our accomplishments.
In the shady world of FIFA, the pair with sticky fingers fit right in. Blazer became known as Mr. 10% because of a contract that entitled him to a 10% commission on all of CONCACAF's marketing deals. And Warner, he had long been suspected of fixing matches, selling World Cup tickets on the black market, and even worse, seeking gifts in return for supporting World Cup bids. Their partnership made them fabulously wealthy, propelling them up the ranks of international soccer's ruling elite, and landed them spots on FIFA's all-powerful executive committee. It also earned them the trust of President Sepp Blatter, who led FIFA from 1998 until 2015. By trust, I mean no one got on FIFA's executive committee without Blatter's full support.
The ultimate sporting power broker.
The most powerful man in world football, Sepp Blatter.
He's the mayor of world soccer.
FIFA is his baby.
He's treated as a head of state. He flies in private planes, and he's given great deference around the world.
Part politician, and it seems to me, part mafia boss, Blatter ruled international soccer with an iron fist. Just like in the mafia, if you earn for the family provides for you. Warner and Blazer owed their wealth and status to the empire Blatter ruled.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has skeletons in their closet. Mine certainly does. Ones that go back 100 years and reach thousands of miles back to our hometown in Sicily. Ever since I can remember, my relatives told the story of my great-great-grandmother who was killed by the mafia. I'm Joe Piazza, and in my new podcast, I'm taking on a generational vendetta, visiting the scene of the crime, confronting mafia experts, tracking down Italian officials, and even consulting mediums to set the record straight on my great-great-grandmother's mysterious disappearance. And in between the fact-finding missions, I'll be drinking a lot of wine and eating all of the pasta. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, back to that email Warner sent to Blazer on April 1st, 2011. Warner was about to risk all of their success and possibly fortunes on a foolish scheme. When the email first arrived, Blazer was furious. He couldn't believe what he was reading. Warner wrote in the email that he had decided to support Sepp Blatter's challenger in the upcoming 2011 FIFA presidential election. Jack Warner was backing Mohammed bin Hammam, a longtime FIFA official and president of the Asian Soccer Federation.
The battle for the presidency has been likened to a civil war within the organization.
The then 62-year-old from the oil-rich nation of Qatar stood little chance of unseating Blatter on his own. But Qatar had already shocked the sports world once before.
The winner to organize the 2022 FIFA World Cup is Qatar.
That's right. Just a few months before, in December of 2010, this small desert nation of just over 1.5 million people was awarded the 2022 World Cup. It lacked modern FIFA-style stadiums and had no soccer pedigree whatsoever. What Qatar did have was money, lots of oil and gas money, and a desire to be a player on the world stage. And so too did Mohammed bin Hammam, who orchestrated Qatar's World Cup winning bid over countries like Australia, Japan, and the United States. Still, Jack Warner's plan to back bin Hammam seemed needlessly reckless to Blazer. As part of his scheme, Warner had invited bin Hammam to Trinidad and Tobago's capital, Port of Spain, to meet with about 25 of the Caribbean's most important soccer bosses, who would vote in the upcoming FIFA election. Together, they could swing the vote against Blatter and in favor of bin Hammam. In the shadowy back rooms of FIFA deal-making, that meant money. Lots of money in the pockets of soccer officials, who would choose the next FIFA president. After reading the email, a panicked Blazer immediately fired off a sarcastic response to Warner. Journalist Mary Papenfuss saw the email.
I think his first line was, "I hope this is an April Fool's joke."
It actually was April Fool's Day, but Warner's plan was anything but a joke.
Chuck heard about it, and he was just panicky. And he told him, "We can do this more discreetly in a better way." He said, "Please don't do this."
Weeks later, when Jack Warner and the 25 Caribbean soccer bosses met in Port of Spain, he barreled ahead with his plan. Warner's lack of discretion was on full display when he doled out $1 million on behalf of bin Hammam in small brown paper envelopes. And that's what Blazer had learned in the call that made him so angry that he threw his phone across the room.
they passed out $40,000 bribes in cash to 25 members of the Caribbean Football Union.
One of the officials from the Bahamas who was in the room with Warner had called Blazer to tell him about the bribes. What no one knew at the time, but we know now, was part of the two-day meeting in Port of Spain was filmed. The audio, it isn't great, but if you could see the grainy video, you'd see a nondescript conference room in Trinidad's Hyatt Regency Hotel with about two dozen Caribbean soccer officials sitting behind long rows of tables, each one with a small bottle of water and a clear drinking glass at their side. We do have the audio. You can hear Jack Warner on tape brazenly urging his fellow Caribbean soccer officials to accept the, quote, gift for Mohammed bin Hammam.
The gift you get is for you to determine how best you want to use it.
And if you ever wondered what it might sound like if ethics and integrity were blatantly mocked in the act of bribery, well, Warner happily provided a script, telling anyone who considered returning the money because of ethical concerns to go open a church.
I know there are some people here who believe they're more pious than thou. If you're pious, open a church, friends.
If you're pious, open a church, friends. No one would accuse Blazer of being pious. And yet he was beside himself after hearing about the bribes and the envelopes stuffed with cash. His longtime partner in crime had crossed soccer's godfather, the most powerful man in world sport, Sepp Blatter. Chuck Blazer and Jack Warner were now on opposite sides of the battle for control of FIFA. Here again, Mary Papenfuss.
I think if it had been done more discreetly, with more sophistication, and Sepp Blatter would have been lost the position, Chuck wouldn't have cared. It was just, it couldn't have been contained because there were whistleblowers calling people up. So he knew he had to come out fast on the right side. That was, you know, the red line. Chuck had to turn Jack in or go down in flames with him.
Anxious, angry, afraid, Blazer knew he had no choice but to report Warner to FIFA's leadership. Still, he hesitated for a few days, knowing full well that his longtime friend could be vindictive, and that Warner knew all of Blazer's personal secrets. Secrets that could end Blazer's FIFA career, or even worse, land him in prison. A frantic Blazer made a call to FIFA's Secretary General, Jerome Valk.
The one man many thought could beat top football chief Sepp Blatter withdraws. Mohammed bin Hammam of Qatar says he won't stand for FIFA president. It's a last-minute decision taken just before he was due to answer claims of corruption.
And soccer's ruling bosses immediately opened an ethics investigation.
The FIFA scandal rumbles on.
Within days, Warner and bin Hammam were out, banned from the sport.
Football's governing body has tried to tackle its shady inner workings by suspending two executives on corruption charges.
Blatter would easily be re-elected for a fourth term as FIFA's president. And then he casually brushed aside the entire scandal that was staring his sport right in the face. Here's Sepp Blatter.
Crisis? Yes. What is a crisis? If somebody of you would describe to me what there is a crisis, then I would answer. Football is not in a crisis.
Blazer was hailed as a hero and went before the camera as the clean face of an organization long suspected of corruption.
What can be done to clean up FIFA then?
What I did, and that is to turn around and to expose it where it exists.
The journalist Grant Wall notes the irony.
For a while, it was hilarious. Chuck Blazer was being called a whistleblower when Chuck Blazer had been just as corrupt as Jack Warner hand in hand for decades.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I never thought I'd take my three young kids to Sicily to solve a century-old mystery, but that's what I'm doing in my new podcast, The Sicilian Inheritance. Join us as we travel thousands of miles on the beautiful and crazy island of Sicily, as I trace my roots back through a mystery for the ages and untangle clues within my family's origin story, which has morphed like a game of telephone through the generations. Was our family matriarch killed in a land deal gone wrong? Or was it by the Sicilian mafia? A lover's quarrel? Or was she, as my father believed, a witch? Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the outside, the Chet Holyfield Federal Building in Orange County, California, it couldn't look more out of place. With its steep, triangular walls, it looks more like an ancient Mesopotamian temple than a U.S. government building. Inside, however, with its endless, bright, fluorescent lights, white tile floors, and rows of cubicles, it looks and feels like what it is, the regional offices of the Internal Revenue Service. In August of 2011, just a few months after Warner tried to bribe those Caribbean soccer officials, Assistant Special Agent in Charge Amy Chabillion was at her desk when she was forwarded a news article from one of her senior agents, Steve Berryman. You'll remember Berryman as one of the two federal agents who stopped Blazer outside of Trump Tower on that crisp November night in 2011. Berryman rushed into Chabillion's office to show her a news article with the headline, FBI Examines U.S. Soccer Boss's Financial Records. The British investigative journalist Andrew Jennings detailed $500,000 worth of suspicious payments made to Blazer from dodgy Caribbean soccer officials. the British public were irate with FIFA after losing out on the 2018 World Cup to Russia. Britain's press were sniffing around for stories about FIFA corruption, confident that Russia and Qatar bribed FIFA officials to win their World Cup bids. At the time, Blazer was still flying high as the whistleblower on FIFA corruption.
Is FIFA inherently corrupt?
No, sir.
No?
I think individuals are.
For longtime followers of global sport, like Andrew Jennings, Blazer's act was an ironic twist of events. Jennings had spent the better part of the previous two decades chronicling FIFA's shady inner workings and had written several books about FIFA's corruption. Jennings knew Blazer's hands were dirty. When questioned by Jennings and other journalists, Blazer didn't deny receiving the offshore payments. He insisted, though, all the transactions were done legally. Jennings knew Blazer's explanation of the payments didn't add up. Blazer's carefully constructed house of cards was beginning to collapse, not only for him, but also for FIFA. And after seeing the news that Jennings broke, Berryman, a lifelong soccer fan, thought it best to look more closely at Blazer's claims.
He looked into the tax filing and discovered there was a really good potential for a tax case.
That's Amy Shabillion, Berryman's boss.
We didn't see any open bank accounts even in his name. From my perspective, I saw somebody that was living pretty high, living here in the United States, clearly making income and not filing.
Despite the appearance of overflowing wealth, remember the two Trump Tower apartments? Blazer hadn't filed U.S. taxes in years. Mary Papenfest told me there's an easy explanation. Blazer's money was, in fact, FIFA's money.
He didn't spend a penny of his own money. CONCACAF, the local FIFA organization, paid his rent. Every time he went out to dinner, everything he ate was paid for.
If the FBI was sniffing around FIFA, as media reports suggested, then Steve Berryman had just discovered a surefire way to get inside of FIFA's inner circle. Chuck Blazer. Shabillion's office reached out to the FBI to offer its help.
The team presented it to them to see if they were interested in inviting us into their case.
Again, the Department of Justice and the FBI have been tracking FIFA's corruption for years. Its dodgy TV deals, the payments to crooked officials, and World Cup vote buying. But federal investigators had made surprisingly little progress in their case against the secretive international organization based in Zurich, Switzerland, a country famous for its secretive banking system. What Berryman had uncovered and was now offering the FBI was what law enforcement agencies throughout history have needed to crack any large-scale corruption conspiracy. An inside man. Shabillion only realized later how important the Blazer break had been.
I really did not understand the gravity of that connection with FIFA. There were members of the team that were thinking, this is huge. I remember thinking, tax case sounds awesome. You know, that's what I want my agents to be working. And if it became something bigger, then all the better.
What started as an IRS investigation into an eccentric and colorful sports executive turned into one of the largest international corruption cases in history and would lead to dozens of FIFA officials being charged with fraud, corruption, and money laundering. The investigation would wipe out most of FIFA's entrenched senior leadership and expose the dark underbelly of world soccer. But the 2015 FBI raid is only the start of our story. Actually, it's more like the middle of our story. FIFA's corruption and depravity run deeper than money laundering and bribery. Since the 1950s, FIFA's leaders have been accused of enabling dictators and turning a blind eye to gross human rights violations. Its history is one built on colonialism and inherent racism. And maybe it's no wonder that history led to an organization some say looks more like the mafia than a modern sports empire. Its top executives are accused of using the organization's vast wealth to buy influence, line their pockets, and remain in power. Coming up on episode 2, a corrupt kingdom that took decades to build comes crashing down as the Lords of Soccer get a rude awakening from the U.S. Department of Justice. The Lords of Soccer, How FIFA Stole the Beautiful Game, is an Inside Voices Media production in conjunction with iHeartRadio. The series was written and executive produced by Gary Scott and me, Connor Powell. Logan Heftel and Katie McMurrin provided the sound design with assistance from JC Swadek and Jake Bluenote. Alec Cowan is our associate producer, and Jeffrey Katz was our story editor. Our fact checker is Alexa O'Brien. And thanks to Miles Gray, who produced this series for iHeartRadio. If you have any comments or questions, please reach out. You can find us on Twitter. I'm at Connor M. Powell, and Gary is at Gary Robert Scott. And if you have any stories about FIFA, let us know. If you like what you hear, please give us a shout out at the hashtag Lords of Soccer.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, starting May 6th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.